Welcome to Your Ultimate Life Podcast, where we help you break free from mediocrity and create a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. Get your free video series at yourultimatelife.ca.
Welcome to today's episode of Your Ultimate Life. Today's episode 851, and I am going to talk today about money made simple. Creating the ultimate life, a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy is my subject, it's my goal, it's my life, and of course it's the thing that I'm working on to help 250 million people discover who they really are and then create from that infinite possibility. So let's talk again, like I do often, about what that means. Who you really are. Well, you can define that a lot of ways, and it means a lot of things. You might be defined by an occupation, a lawyer, an accountant, a restaurateur, an entrepreneur, a barista. You know, you can be defined a lot of ways, and all of those are accurate. An ultimate life is creating a life of purpose, where you're living on purpose, like on track. You're doing what you want to do. And I talk to a lot of people, and often the phrases, I don't know what that is. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Or I have these vague feelings, but I can't see a way to make it work. And so it just remains this ethereal thing out of reach while I go to work every day and slog forward, mired in the stuff that's in front of me. Well, that's the lot of most people. And sometimes you get to be successful, you get a good job, you get some promotions, you get into real estate at the right time, you make some good investments, or you have a break, someone knows you, or so you have this opportunity, and then things go well. But that almost always is measured in terms of cash. So the opportunity is good because I made cash. And cash is viewed often as the solution to everything, and it's not. It's good, it's necessary, and we have to pay rent, eat, and, you know, create a life using the trade medium of money. But it's not, believe me, it's not the be-all, end-all, even though we live in a world that has the religion of money, worship of cash. Everything is good. Money solves everything. And we're not going to go on a big, long conversation about why that's not even true. How many wealthy people are addicts and, you know, multiple failed relationships and commit suicide and, you know, on and on and on. We're not going to talk about that. That's self-evident, and you know that. And at the same time, money is necessary, and creating cash is necessary. So let's talk about money. Money made simple. Money is an exchange medium. We use it to trade. I do something, you pay me money, I take money, take it to the store, and buy bread. That's all. That's all it ever is. The religion of money is separate, which means if someone has more, if you have more money than I do, then you're better than me. That's the religion of money, which says you get to buy more stuff, have more stuff, be more important, have more access, and therefore you're better than I am. And that is the religion of money, the basic tenet. Whoever has more is the most important. Unfortunately, we live in a world, in much of our world at least, if not all, where money allows you to buy things that create that illusion that someone is more important. Money might buy you more control. Now, we're in the midst of a heated political thing in the United States. I live in Canada, my wife and I, but we're both dual nationals, so we're paying attention to what's going on south of our border in the U.S. There's a heated debate. There's all kinds of accusations and negative things being said by everybody about everybody else. And, you know, fines and trials and, you know, what appears to some to be a concerted effort to overwhelm one candidate with legal woes and cost him a lot of money so they can't run an effective presidential campaign. Others view that as just deserts for evil committed. All of that is part of this religion of money. I'm not going to talk about that today. This isn't a rant about money being good or bad or who did what good or what bad with their cash. That's happening. I'm not pretending it away. But I want to do something that's valuable to you, and ranting about others' deeds or misdeeds isn't it. Money is a simple thing. If you need more money, there is one step to take to get it, and that is create something of value. Now, I've said that before. Several episodes ago, I talked about making money is easy, And I said, money follows value. It does. The something that has occurred to me since then that I have to clarify to make that even more true or hit home harder is that the value is in the eyes of the purchaser. If I do something, if I write a book, and I think it's the best thing that ever got written, and I think it'll solve the world's problems and be wonderful and, you know, all kinds of things, and that's what I think, and I think I should be paid a lot of money and everybody in the world should read it or buy it, or if I write a song and I think everybody should listen, if the buyer doesn't think that, if they don't see value, then I don't get any money. So money follows value. That is true, but it has to be value in the eyes of the purchaser. The person with the money has to see the value and say, okay, I'll give you my money for that thing because I see the value. That's one of the biggest struggles I see when I'm helping coaches like me learn to find clients or financial advisors to find clients or insurance salesmen to find clients. They talk about as if the value they're providing is obvious. Well, if you work with me, you know, all this stuff, you know, you buy this insurance or if I'm your coach or whatever it is. And it's, okay, I see all this value. What's your problem? And then there's a struggle with the business part. Well, because the person with the money doesn't see the value yet. Now, when you go to the grocery store, that's not a problem because we know what bread tastes like and we know we make sandwiches and it feels good. So the value is already written in the fabric of our society and discourse. You buy a car, you know what it does, gets you from place to place. There's an argument about gas or electric or hybrid or whatever, but we still know what a car is. And your only decision or mine is which car, how much is it? Do I want to worry about, you know, the electric problems, the cold this last winter with all those cars dying? You know, all those things are part of it. But the value of a car is not an issue. It is a transportation mechanism, and I know it works because I've had one before and everybody's got them. So money made simple, you need to create value in the eyes of the person with the money. Now, if you're growing food, that's easy. But if you're doing something else, and most people are, so maybe you're writing a book, maybe you have a skill in art. I have a client who's a fabulous, world-class artist. But his wonderful skill is worth exactly nothing until someone sees a painting and says, I want that, I want me in that or this picture, because that person sees value. Yes, I'll give you some of my energy, my money for that, because I see value. So money follows value is true, but it's value in the eye of the person with the money. And what we don't do is try to talk them into it. That's the old kind of sales tactics. Use car salesmen, pushy people, keep pushing and pushing and pushing until out of desperation, you give them some money to shut them up and get rid of them. That's not what we're talking about. I'm talking about real value exchange. So when you think about creating money, money follows value. If you want more money, you and you alone need to figure out how to create value in the eyes of someone with money so they will pay you. Whether it's piano lessons or babysitting or art or coaching, which is what I do, or writing books in such a way that someone sees value. So creating an object of value in the eyes of the beholder is the key to getting money. That's not complicated. It is a simple thing. The complication every single time is when we, and I have that conversation with people, and I have it a lot because I'm a coach, and 2/3 of the clients come to me. They need to create more business, sell more stuff, find more clients, make more money. 2/3 of the time, maybe 3/4. That's at least one of the goals. The question isn't an argument about, yeah, I need to create something of value. It is the story in my heart about what's valuable. And the story always goes something like this. If I grow something or I sculpt or I paint, there's a physical object and the value is there. And some people like it and some people don't. Same thing with songs. I write music. Some people like them, some people don't. That's just the way it is. It's that way with every song and every kind and genre of music. The problem comes when the person who wants money, you or me, we sidetrack ourselves from just answering the question, what can I produce that's valuable in the eyes of the beholder, in the eyes of the person with money, and how do I get busy doing that? What do I need to create it? You know, what are the resources? How do I rearrange my schedule and time? What things can I give up so I can create some time to build this thing or make it? Those are just activities. The problems come when we get in our own way, coach speak, right? We sidetrack ourselves by story saying, I don't have anything. I can't think of a single thing that I can do or be or say that's valuable. Well, then, of course, you're done. Go home. Forget it. Figure out how to live on the money you already have. Because if you're convinced you can't do it, that barrier alone will prevent you from creating anything, and it will also poison whatever you create. It's like if you write a book and you write it from the point of view of this won't really help you, and it's kind of stupid, and I hope it's valuable for you, that energy will be in the book, and nobody will buy it, nobody will like it, and it won't be valuable. So that first barrier to finding value is the idea that you have nothing. Well, you're as good as anybody else. You're as smart as me. You're as smart as the next person. You've had amazing life experiences, hardships, struggles, triumphs, victories. You've had all those. You have the ability to go learn skills, whatever they are. Playing tennis. I think I said playing tennis because I saw a picture the other day about the Williams girls. And it was a story or something about them, about how they worked so hard and their ascendancy to championship level, mastery level in that particular sport. But anyway, you have the ability to do something if you want it. The thought, the consistent, pervasive thought of it's not good enough, nobody will like it, and it sucks, and so why bother? That will derail you every single time. It will get in your way and prevent you from creating something that someone else sees as valuable, so they pay you. Now, I work with a lot of people who create courses, who write books, who create programs from their life experience. So I have, as guests on the show, had people that deal with addictions and raising kids struggles with that and changing jobs and getting fired and, you know, getting laid off and what to do next and finding your passion and all of those things. And the purpose of all those is, how do I turn that into something valuable to offer in the marketplace? 99% of the time, in fact, I would say 100% of the time, there is some level of hesitation and trepidation. I don't think I can do this. That's the first barrier. You don't know that. You don't know that. You have a story about that, and you're free to own that story. And as long as you have it, it will contaminate what you have. So what I'd like to do in this middle piece right here, this piece, is talk about a way. Here is a way that I help people find, identify specifically something that they could offer in the marketplace that the marketplace would see value in, so they pay you, right? I call it the triple helix. I've talked about this before on different episodes. I'm going to lay it out again carefully, and I'm doing it again because this comes up so often. I don't have anything. I don't know what to do. Well, it's going to take work. Finding the thing that someone will find valuable is going to take work. My client that I mentioned earlier, who's an artist, he's been doing this for decades. And put in unknown hours to perfect his craft. And so that kind of work is required if you want high value. If you want low value things, you can do simple things, right? Now, I was walking down the street in a city, and I can't remember what city, one day, and I passed a person who was appeared to be a street person. I don't know that, but appeared so. And he wasn't panhandling. He was offering something for sale. Now, the things he was offering for sale were small little wooden boxes that were very crudely put together, but they worked. They were little boxes, and they looked nice, and they had a little lid. And I have a lot of kids, so I bought 7 or 8 of them because I liked it and I wanted to support his effort to do something. And so I don't remember how much I paid for each one of them, $4 or $5. And he, because of his effort in creating value. So I paid him, bought them all, and because I had a lot of kids, I ended up buying 8, I think. All right. But he was doing something instead of saying, I can't, somebody just give me stuff. That moved me because of the effort, however simple it was. I don't care where he got them or anything. So here's the triple helix. You have 3 things from which you can find a valuable thing in the marketplace. Number one, you have a set of skills. Those are things you've probably sold in the marketplace before. Maybe you cut lawns. Maybe you're an accountant. Maybe you're a dentist. Maybe you are a philosopher. Maybe you deliver pizza. I don't know. But you have a set of skills that you have used before this moment. And from that set of skills, you've been paid. You've offered those in the marketplace. For example, I have done lawns. I worked in an auto body shop. I worked for the utility company for in different capacities for many years. I worked in an attorney's office, and several other things that I'm not thinking of right this minute. Oh, I owned a recording studio, and I've been a session musician, and all kinds of things. Those are skills that I've developed. Now, if you sit down and make a list of all the skills that you've ever been paid for, anything that you've been paid for, that's a list of things. You already know you could offer that skill in the marketplace. Some skills have become obsolete. In 2008, when that big real estate recession hit in the U.S., after that, when people were looking for jobs, all kinds of jobs were gone. Things were restructured. Why? Because of technology. That's happening again right now with the advent of AI. Lots of jobs have disappeared and lots of new ones have been created because of this new far-reaching tool has come into the marketplace. So many of the skills you have will still be valid, and some of them you won't want to do. I babysat when I was 11 or 12 years old for, some neighbors across the street had a couple of little kids, and I babysat them when they went out for an evening. I don't want to sell that skill in the marketplace. I'm not interested in babysitting, but it's a skill that I have. All right, so that's your first piece. The second thing is you have a set of natural gifts. You may or may not have paid much attention to that. Okay, and what we tend to do is we tend to diminish the value of those gifts because they're something that comes easy to you. Maybe you're naturally organized. Maybe you naturally listen really well and people are comfortable talking to you. Maybe you have really good intuition and insight into stuff. Maybe you have a natural gift that's obvious, like music or art or athletic gifts. Those natural gifts are things that you're endowed with. I call them divine gifts because, the way I think of things and see it is we're divine beings. We're created on purpose by a loving God who put us here for our growth and experience. And every single one of us was given many gifts, some of which are visible, like maybe art or music or speaking, and others are less visible, like the ability to know what to say and to be comfortable to talk to and trustworthy and those kinds of things. But you have them. So a list of those things is next. The third thing and the third piece of your triple helix or triple DNA, money DNA, call it your money DNA, is your life experience. Some people have had a relatively easier life. Maybe they raised, with a lot of money, and so they didn't struggle that way. And that presents its own sets of challenges. Or maybe you grew up in poverty, and maybe you had to struggle for everything, and you had a story of can't afford everything all the time. Or maybe you grew up just kind of average, and you worked hard at school, or maybe you didn't work hard at school. It doesn't really matter what the path was. The path you walked has taught you stuff. It's taught you how to be resourceful. It's taught you how to be resilient. Maybe it taught you about giving up. Maybe you gived up. Maybe you had drug problems like I did. Maybe you've had failed relationships. Maybe you were an alcoholic, or maybe you had bankruptcy. Maybe you had failures. The failures tend to teach us more than successes because they're stark and they feel like more of a slap, a wake-up call. if you take time to list 25 life experiences that mattered to you, you'll have a huge catalog of things that you've learned. Now, there's a book that I have called The Story Arc. The Story Arc. It's on Amazon. And there's a process in there to help you do this. But the assignment is identify 20 or 30 or 40 events in your life, good ones and bad ones, that you easily remember. Back in grade school, you broke your leg and missed a ski trip. I don't know, but a set of events. Your parents got divorced when you were in high school. You were valedictorian. A set of events all through your life, from little to now, where something happened, right, that you remember. That's column one. Column two is, okay, what did you feel about it then? Was it bad? Was it good? What did it do to you or do for you? The third column is what is the effect today? Today, as you look back at that, those years ago, maybe many years or maybe a few years, what do you think about it now? The fourth column is how would the difference between the second and third column, how would that help someone? What is the value in your own change of perspective? An example might be, I broke my leg in the third grade. I missed a ski trip that I wanted to go on. I was really angry and frustrated and furious that it wasn't fair, et cetera, et cetera. That was how I looked at it then, how I look at it today. Legs heal, life goes on. Missing a ski trip isn't the end of the world. You can be resilient and get over stuff. That difference can be valuable, and it was taught to me in a particular way. You'll have that kind of experience for each of those events. Now, when you look at your existing skills, your natural gifts, and your life experience, you're going to find, if you look, and this is why it takes work, a combination woven together of those things that allows you to see, what could I offer? I've got a client right now that's writing a book for tween girls, for ages 8 to 13, to help them with, you know, growing up issues and self-esteem and that kind of stuff. Why? Because her combination of those things gives her particular insight, things that happened to her in that age and that sort of thing. So you have that too. And every time I meet someone and we talk and they say, I got nothing, they can always find way more than one, two, three, four, five, sometimes so many they don't know what to pick. Things, ideas, thoughts, concepts, that you could offer in the marketplace that the marketplace would find valuable, some segment of the marketplace. Now, you're never going to sell, you know, everybody is never going to be your market, right? Just like everybody is like one particular genre of music. But there's going to be a segment of people who need, who want what you have to offer. So don't tell me you can't make more money. What you're really saying is, I'm not willing to do the work that it takes to figure out what I could offer, then create that thing, whether it's a physical product or a digital product, a book, a course, and I'm not unwilling to do the work to put that in the marketplace. I don't know how. Learning how to do that is easy. People have been doing this stuff with marketing online now for 20 years almost, and so the path to making that and getting stuff available is been made easy and easy and easier and easier. Publishing a book, creating a course, those are all doable, and there's thousands of people out there whose business it is to help people like you who want to do that. There are two things that I see consistently get in the way that I want to encourage you on. One is fear, the fear that I have nothing, and even if I do it, it won't work. Well, if that's where you want to live, then you're true. It is true, and that is a self-fulfilling prophecy. I can't make it not take work. I can't make people buy my own stuff or yours. But you're not going to know until you try. And in the effort, you change. You become a person of action. You become a person of doing instead of thinking. You become a creator instead of a reactor. you have taken control of your life instead of whining about lack of control. That change is the most powerful thing you could do. Moving from victim, all this stuff's happening to me and I need to make more money and I can't because of all these reasons, to a place of, I can. I'm willing to do the work. I can mine my life, my skills, my gifts, and my life experience for something valuable, and then do the work to create and offer it in the marketplace. I personally know people who sculpt, who create jewelry, who write courses and write books. Using that book, The Story Arc, I've helped many, many, many authors create not only books, write books, but also create courses and offer them for sale or create coaching or teaching programs about whatever it is that they're passionate about and good about. So the idea that you can't do it is simply not true. That you don't feel capable could well be true. That you're afraid could well be true. That you don't feel worthy or that you're not worth it could also be true. I personally have experienced all those things during my decades of depression. We haven't talked about that today, but if you want the story, it's in the book, Tightrope of Depression, that talks about my own journey for decades in that pit and feeling those things. But it also talks about overcoming and changing. And that's my work now. My work is to help, as I mentioned, 250 million people this year discover who they really are, which means these gifts, talents, and skills, and then create something powerful to offer the world, to both make money and make an impact. So money made simple. Money follows value. The value's in the eyes of the beholder. You have something of value. Using that triple helix method I described in this episode is one method of doing it. There are others, but nothing will happen until you take action. That's obvious. The fear that you can't will stop you unless you choose otherwise. My own experience was that I found that getting a coach and getting involved with others who are doing the same kinds of things was helpful in eliminating fear, helping me stay consistent, and taking the action I needed to get to the goal line. Those things were most helpful. I also, personally, in my own life experience, needed a large dose of self-forgiveness because I'd made so many mistakes and had so many people close to me and otherwise unhappy with me and saying bad things. So part of my journey was getting past all that. But I did. And you can. And so my encouragement today as we wind up is you can have money. You can create the money you want. You have the knowledge, you have the skills, and anything you don't know how to do can be found easily and quickly. All the help you need to create what you'd like to create out of your life is available to you. That is my business. If you want my help, reach out. I'd love to talk and see what's going on and what we could create together. Whether you talk to me or someone else, the key is to take action, overcome fear, read the book, The Story Arc. If you're interested in my story, read the book, Tightrope of Depression. There are so many stories about people stuck to unstuck, can't to yes, I can. You can be one of those no matter where you are today, no matter where you're starting. Money is available to you right here, right now, as just one element, not the most important, but certainly a key ingredient to creating a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. That's what I call your ultimate life. Open your
heart and this time around. Thank you for listening to today's episode. We hope that you take it deeply into your heart and decide for yourself how you can create anything you desire. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends. As always, we'd love to hear your feedback and topic suggestions. Until tomorrow, this is Your Ultimate Life with host Kellen Flukiger. Stand with your heart in the sky.